Hello and welcome to a brand new kind of Arsenal podcast brought to you proudly by the Gooners podcast in conjunction with the Highbury squad. It's a respite from the wins and losses, which we really could use right about now. A break from tactics and talking points, just good old-fashioned fun, chats and banter with some of the most recognizable faces within our great Arsenal family, telling their stories, sharing their views, and answering your questions. Join us now live as we travel from Highbury to the Grove. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to From Highbury to the Grove, episode 4, live from day 2 of Goonerpalooza in Chicago, Illinois, USA. If you missed us last week, I just want to say we had a great conversation with Alan Smith, the Smudger himself. We talked about his early days at Arsenal Football Club. We talked about how David Rocastle helped him feel welcome at the club when he first arrived. The lost art of scoring with your head, the club culture under George Graham, and his experiences adjusting to, you know, an early retirement at the age of 32 due to injury. If you've missed any of the episodes that we've had, Amy Lawrence, Clive Palmer, Smudger, highly recommend you go back and watch them on the Highbury Squad or Gooners Podcast YouTube channels. The beauty of this series that I love doing is that we focus on the guests, not the results, so the interviews never get stale. So today we move forward and upward and try to get over yesterday and welcome a man who combined his passions for the Arsenal, writing, web design, and broadcasting more than 20 years ago, which with what then was a new format, kind of innovation in media that I think the kids call today blogging and like the podcasting thingy that I keep hearing so much about. His website, containing original content from himself and a team of great writers, is viewed by over 100 million people. And his twice-weekly podcast gets over 1 billion subscribers. It's one out of every 8 people on Earth. It's amazing. It is my pleasure to welcome to a podcast a man who still talks to me despite knowing better, Andrew Arsblog Mangan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike. I suspect your numbers might be just a little bit off there, a bit like Chelsea's finances. They might be a little wrong, but I appreciate it all the same.
A lot of those numbers, you're accused of bringing those in internally and funneling them through fake sponsorships. But, you know, I believe them. I think. Yeah, exactly. So we've had better weeks as Arsenal supporters, I dare to say. You know, always love having a great guest, great show. And then, like, the 5 days beforehand, it's just completely crapping the bed. But, you know, the last time we did a podcast together, it was the 27-hour Gooners versus Cancer Pod-a-thon. The season had just started. A little underwhelming, but we were scraping by. Now we find ourselves a little bit later in the season competing for a title, but maybe a little less excited than we were just a week ago.
Maybe. Look, the thing you have to remember with all of this stuff is that it's completely and utterly out of our hands, all of it. There is literally nothing we can do to influence it. We can only be influenced by it and affected by it. And I think once you let yourself understand that you're committed to the absurd spectacle of 11 millionaires running around a pitch kicking a football while another 7 millionaires sit on the bench waiting to come on and run around and kick a football, you know, you can find your perspective. But it hasn't been the greatest week of all time, but who knows? Sometimes you've got to go down to get back up again, and it's not outside the history of this great football club that something looks like it's gone and then somehow we get it back. I hope that's the case, and in a few weeks' time we're all smiling.
Yeah, we tend to be contrarians as a football team. And you said it perfectly. You know, when you think that we're down and out, we come back and salvage something, like some of those FA Cup victories in years where it looked like all was lost. We've seen that within seasons where, you know, we're just in a really bad run of form, and then all of a sudden we go and beat Man City or something of the like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you also hit the nail on the head. I'm glad you said it rather than me, because I'm getting tired of saying it, that, you know, the people with their standards and their ambition who have nothing to do with how we perform. Like the louder you yell is going to make us play better, or makes you more of a supporter. I don't get it. And unfortunately, the last 5 or 6 days have brought out a lot of them people on the social medias.
Well, look, they're there, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to police anybody's reaction. People are perfectly entitled to feel how they feel about you. That's fine. That's your gig. You know, you're sort of like the Richard Keys of
the non-celebration police.
Yeah, the non-celebration police. How dare you not celebrate? But, you know, I think everybody has to process things in their own way. And, you know, do we need to get into a deep dive about how social media doesn't necessarily reflect reality and the way people speak and the way they would speak to each other? You know, it's just part of the media landscape these days. It's something you either, you know, you've got to either embrace it and say, this is what it is, and I can live in this world, and I can deal with these opinions, and I can engage with these opinions. Or you can say, fuck, who's got time for that? Let them spew whatever it is they want to spew, and I will go and do something a little bit more constructive with my life. You know, I'm all for obviously opinion and talking about football, but there's only so much I can deal with at this moment in time, or at any moment in time, actually. You know, even when things are going well, I think it's better to sort of remove yourself a little bit from the excesses of social media. It's never as bad as people say when it's bad, and maybe it's never quite as good as people say when it's good either. So here we are.
I prefer personally to celebrate loudly and mourn quietly, or just mourn while I'm sleeping. I've taken a lot of naps that immediately followed Arsenal losing a game.
How do you mourn when you're sleeping?
I'm at the stadium when that happens?
I mean, can you multitask like that? Do you have a little?
I have fallen asleep during a particularly bad Arsenal game, which Gunnar Russ in the chat can tell you about. But that had more to do with red wine than it did to do with the performance. So,
see, what you need to do for next season is just have
a bed in the
No. Go online. And how many games are we going to play next season? 38 in the Premier League and Champions League games and FA Cup. So get yourself about 60 mini coffins. And then every time we lose a game, you just go to sleep and put one of those coffins under your pillow. And that way you're both mourning and sleeping at the same time. And all the badness will go into that coffin. At the end of the season, you have some kind of pagan ritual and burn all those coffins. Nothing bad can come of that. I've watched horror films. It'll be fine.
This is why you're you, because that's a brilliant idea. And we have so many creative Arsenal artists and craftsmen and craftswomen in the fan base that I'm sure those coffins, if they don't already exist, they will within a week.
No doubt.
and will become the third sponsor for this show. So you've kind of led into a question that I wanted to have for you, which is, you know, we've talked about how kind of the typical or the variety of different Arsenal supporters around the world process these things. You, through the hard work that you've done and the position you find yourself in through that hard work, are no ordinary Arsenal supporter, because you do tend to be, despite your humble approach to being an everyman, you are relied upon for context, for opinion, for humor, for feedback, and along with James, who you know, brings a different but also, you know, compatible perspective to that. How do you process the games when they are happening? I mean, you are both keeping tabs on information. I mean, your blog first thing this morning was very detailed about how the game goes. So, you know, there's watching the game to memorialize it and discuss it and talk about it and write about it later. And there's watching the game with emotion, like I did at the pub yesterday with, you know, with 150 different people. How do you reconcile that in your personal enjoyment of the team and your professional life?
It's impossible to watch Arsenal without emotion, you know, even if for most of the games I'm kind of working because we do the live blog and then you've got all the other stuff that goes on within the, you know, around a match, all the player ratings and things like that. So my experience of watching games is I don't want to say insular, but very often beyond a few WhatsApps here and there that happen during a game, I'm sort of on my own. And I'm trying to tell people what's happening via the live blog. I'm trying to process what's happening myself. And then afterwards, I have time to think. You know, I never do the blog the next, you know, straight away. I always do it the next morning. Very, very rarely would we do a podcast straight after the game, you know, which is, other people can
who,
do that.
Who would ever do like an instant
who would reaction? Ever do any kind of instant reaction type thing? Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to be you'd have to be some kind of lunatic to want to do that. But you know, some people can do that and do that well. I need some time to sit and think about what it is. And usually, like today, I got up, I downloaded the game again, I made myself watch some of the incidents in the game that I wasn't quite clear on, like their goal, for example, and it wasn't so much the goal as it went in, but the build up to it and how they made that move happen. And I'll sit down and write, but usually I have sort of like a gut feeling about, I don't know exactly what I'm going to write, but I kind of know the tone of it, right? So, you know, when I got up today, it was about trying to connect with the disappointment that I felt and the frustration that I felt, because I think, without going too deep into the weeds, I think we didn't quite give the best account of ourselves over these two legs. And that for me, and I'm sure for many people watching now, is disappointing and frustrating. But I also have to look at it in the context of the overall season, the trajectory of this team, what some of those players out on the pitch who maybe didn't play their best, why didn't they play as well as they can? Are there reasons beyond, well, he's shit and he's terrible and need to get a new one, you know? So you have to try and stay emotionally connected, but also step back and be objective about what it is that you want to write. And that's basically it. It's like it's a habit now. It's an ingrained sort of habit in my morning. It's as much part of my morning ritual as anything else, getting up and making coffee and saying hello to the dogs. It is just what I do. So that's what it is. Like I very rarely do I get up and not have an idea what I'm going to say or how I'm going to say it. But, you know, you just sort of sit down and start typing and out it comes.
Yeah. You mentioning your dog just reminded me, do you know that your Wikipedia entry has a 3-word sentence in it that just says Andrew likes dogs?
That is literally the best. I wish that was just it. Wish that was all that was in the Wikipedia entry. That would be amazing. Why does this guy have a Wikipedia? He just likes dogs. Loads of people like dogs.
It was Leo history, Barcelona, and Croydon, and all this stuff, and then Andrew likes dogs. Amazing. I wasn't planning on bringing it up until you just said that. So, you know, you also mentioned kind of the range of perspective, and this is something I was thinking about last night, because, you know, you're either a person or some people can do both. I like to think that I can do both, but, you know, a lot of the reactions either come from a one game focus and you react to that game. And people who do that only tend to react much, much stronger to the negatives in the one game. When we, you know, the game against Villa, the game against, well, the last game against Villa, today against Munich. I mean, they focus on the one game, and the negative reactions tend to be much, much stronger and longer lasting than the positives. I mean, you know, I didn't hear that many people just absolutely going crazy about beating West Ham 6-0, Burnley 5-0. You know, yeah, you're supposed to do that, not necessarily 5-0 against any team in the Premier League. But, you know, so when you look at it on that short of a term, you tend to focus on the negative more strongly than the positive. When you bring that range out and you look at it over, you know, the video editing, you can stretch the timeline to really, you know, drill down or drill out. And I'm sure you know that. When you stretch it out to a, you know, 3-month period or a 6-month period or a 5-year period in this case, it's hard not to feel good about what's happening despite the current disappointments, I think. And I just think not enough people look at that perspective. They just look at the game to game, but refuse to get exuberant about the positives in that.
Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, what you're paying attention to. If you're paying attention to just people on Twitter spouting off after a game, you know, I'm not sure that's really the best way to get their perspective, because they might well be just reacting to one game. You could be very positive about Arsenal and where we're going and what we're doing and still be very negative about the Aston Villa game, for example. So if in isolation you came across somebody reacting to the Villa game, and you might think, well, this guy is just Mr. Negative. But actually, you know, it's
more when they start recommending permanent changes. You know, and there's one that I can think of that comes up a lot. But that's, you know, where their perspective gets out of hand. Because
right, you know, I mean, is that good faith criticism though? Is that, you know, is that really what someone thinks, or is that somebody who's using that perspective to farm engagement, maybe to generate, you know,
people
money.
Do that?
Yeah, they do. They do. You know, I think you have to be able to recognize that. The other thing I would say, though, is that you give the example of beating West Ham 6-0 and Burnley 5-0, Sheffield United 6-0. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But there is a limited amount to talk about when you do that. Part of what's fun about football sometimes, and we've had to do a lot of this as Arsenal fans, is trying to figure out what's wrong. What's wrong? What went wrong? What can we do to fix that? What can we do to prevent that? You know, if you're talking about things that have gone wrong, I think there is generally, you know, more to say. A defeat tends to resonate longer than a victory, and that's just the reality of human nature. So we have to acknowledge that, and then it's up to every individual to decide whether or not the person they're engaging with is actually engaging in good faith. Yeah. Do they have, like, if they make some criticisms about the Villa game, you know, do they have a point? Are they actually making a good point about, you know, what this team might need or what we can do or how we can improve, you know, for the sake of getting better? Or are they just waiting for, you know, the team to lose so they can then just double down on a preconceived idea or agenda that they might already have?
And we don't use the C word on this pod, but this is where we would if we did use the C
word. Sure, I get it. And I think, you know, most of the people watching this will be able to recognize the difference between an honestly held opinion, which might be critical or negative, versus somebody who might grudgingly give a little bit of, you know, praise here and there, because they've got no choice. Like, if you beat somebody 5-0, 6-0, you can't say, well, this is terrible and I hate the manager and the manager should go, because you're an idiot and everyone will know you're an idiot. So they say, oh yeah, that was all right, actually. Yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the minute something goes wrong, they pile in. And, you know, I know it's difficult not to, and it's tempting. It's so tempting to sort of do battle with people like that, but you might as well pick up a shovel and hit yourself in the face with it, because it's as constructive as doing that, and actually probably worse, because at least
the mental health lasts, and the
wounds that you inflict with the shovel will heal and maybe leave a cool scar or two. So you go to a bar and people go, hey, nice scar, where'd that come from? You could tell them a story about, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of bad faith actors out there, Mike, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure a lot of people watching this understand.
Yeah. Speaking of good faith actors, though, we're up to 260 in the live chat right now. Thanks to all of you for starting off the show with us. As you know, if you've watched this series, the last 20 or 30 minutes of the show, we're going to have Andrew answer your questions, which are, you know, Andrew, you can't use that because I've trademarked it, but questions, which is questions for the guest. Yeah. am I the cheesiest person you've ever met in all your years?
Without question. And that's before you told me that. Like I was looking at the intro. I was going, what is this? What is this intro? What does this remind me of? And it's the Pink Panther. Has anyone said that? You're like the Pink Panther, except sort of Arsenal style and without the comedy French accent.
Oh, geez. No, that's a new one. I haven't heard that. But yeah, very self-indulgent introduction as well. If you know me.
No better man. No better man.
I love me some me. But speaking of the people in the chat, though, the questions, put them in the chat. Start the question off with a G, just like Bill, a.k.a. GunaWorks, has done. We will, star those so that they're saved, and we'll ask them of Andrew at the end of the podcast, which is part of this podcast, is to bring you closer as viewers to some pretty cool people. So I don't think I've asked you this before in our conversations, but if you had to pick one, you're going to hate this question. If you had to pick one and only one between writing the daily blog and doing the twice and sometimes more weekly podcast, which would you choose?
Oh man, that is really difficult. I mean, if I had to pick one at this point of my life, it'd be the twice weekly podcast, because I'd only have to do something twice a week. That'd be amazing. I could just go and play golf or something the rest of the time. But it's so hard because they're very different. You know, I love being behind a microphone. I was always like into radio, and I was a DJ, and you know, I love the creativity that you can have on the mic when you talk and you sort of riff and come up with stuff. It's great. But I also love writing as well. I love the fact that you can express yourself and surprise yourself even when you do write. That you, like I said, you sit down, you start, you don't quite know what's going to come out, and sometimes you think of something or some, you know, I love that element of it as well. So you're asking me to choose from a creative perspective. I think I will go with the writing, but you know, obviously and thankfully I don't have to choose. So I can keep doing both for the moment. And of course there are loads more podcasts on Patreon too. So, quick plug in there, you know, it fulfills my creative itches, I think, both of the things in different ways.
Well, and we're glad that you do both of them. So do you ever get to take, and I don't mean like for a few weeks in the summer, but I mean, do you get to take a mental vacation from Arsenal? I mean, if they're just, I mean, they're hammering you emotionally and psychologically. And I mean, do you ever just get to take a mental break from them and kind of shut down for a week or two?
No. I mean, you know, I have gone on holidays, not a lot of holidays in fairness. But the blog is always going. So, you know, Andrew, Alan will step in, Tim Stillman, Lewis, you know, we'll continue. And Tom, you know, our technical guy, will do the blog and keep the blog going. So, yeah, I do sometimes. But the way things are going with summer tours and the all of that stuff, it's more, maybe a bit more demanding than it used to be. But I have to say, I would, if it were possible, and it's actually not possible, you know, this summer, but I'd love to just go somewhere for like 10 days and sit on a beach and read books and just not think about Arsenal at all or read about Arsenal at all. Because I think
it's going to be in LA and Philly with the likes of me.
Yes, the likes of you and your ilk. that's where I'm going to be.
The Mike Feinberg of the world.
Yes. I do sometimes get a bit of downtime, but I don't complain about the fact that I have to think about Arsenal on such a regular basis, because it would be churlish of me to complain about the privilege I have and the enjoyment I get from doing what I do when so many people don't get that, who have to go out to work every day and don't enjoy what they do, or you know, without bringing it down, there are a lot of people in the world who don't have a lot going on right now and have a lot of terrible things going on around them. So for me to complain that, well, I'm a bit too saturated by Arsenal Football Club seems like very much a first world problem and not the kind of thing that I would complain about in any way.
Speaking of first world, and I couldn't have timed this bet. Well, I didn't time it. This couldn't have been timed together. My next question for you is about a certain someone who has just appeared in the chat. I believe he goes by the name of Gunnerblog. One of the best, if not the best, examples of chemistry in the Arsenal content world is the chemistry between yourself and James McNicholas, aka Gunnerblog. Firstly, you have the same last name, Blog.
That's what brought us together.
I was going to ask, what actually, I'm sure you've answered this question before, but what did bring you together and why do you think it works so well between the two of you?
Well, what brought us together was Arsblog. We had a forum on the website that James was part of. And then he set up Gunnerblog. And he was blogging away and I was blogging away. And there were loads of Arsenal blogs back in the day.
Were you competing? Were you like rivals before you became friends?
No. It was all very collegiate, I have to say, because there was East Lower and there was Good Player and there was Le Grove and there was Culture Westwood, Gunnar Holic, and whatever the thing you just said was. And so James was doing that. And then I started the Arscast back in 2006. I think he was the second ever guest on the podcast, on the Arscast.
Who was the first? And
Good Player. Huh. Yeah. Okay. So Good Player. His blog is defunct now. I think he was just the first one that I had on. And I should remember this because it was our 10-year anniversary. So it would have been January 2014. I sent James a very short email just to say, look, I think there's a gap in the market for another podcast. Would you be interested in doing it with me? And he came back and went, yeah. And that was about as much preparation as we've ever done for anything. And here we are going. And it was just a question for me of like, who do I think I can connect with, but James is obviously a very funny guy, very talented guy, away from the Arsenal world with acting and comedy. And it felt to me when I asked him that, like, we'd obviously known each other quite a while anyway, but we would be able to do something that was enjoyable, not just for the listeners, but for ourselves as well, which I think is the case. If he's still in the comments and hasn't run away now screaming, he might agree with that. Who knows?
Well, and it shows it works. And to attest to your chemistry, we did, I don't know if you remember, about 4 or 5 years ago, we did a short-lived concept called the Podlywed game.
Oh yes, I remember that. I remember that one.
And Tom Canton, actually, pre his career blowing up, hosted a newlywed game style game where Andy Rhodes, who's in the chat, and I were involved, where Sophie and her then podcasting partner were involved, and you and James. Somehow we got you and James to do it, and I believe you guys won.
I think we did. Yeah, I think we did. We're very competitive as well, well as being everything else. We want to win.
Being everything else.
You got to bring the trophies. You got to have the fucking standards.
That's right. That's right. So, and it's only just been 5 more years of chemistry since then. So, because the name of the podcast is From Highbury to the Grove, I do like to talk about Highbury. You and I are approximately the same age. And, you know, like me, you started going to the Arsenal back at the Highbury days. And most importantly, in the terrorist days. Terrorists, like as in the North Bank and Clockhead. And were you North Bank or Clockhead?
It would have been North.
Nice.
Yeah, it would have been North Bank.
Good man. So tell us what the terraces meant to you, because I mean, I left and came back to the States in 1990. I was there. I was actually in Highbury on the North Bank when Hillsborough occurred. So I certainly understand the reasons why the seats had to be installed, but it broke my heart seeing, you know, stands and two levels and stuff on the North Bank. But how do you feel about terraces, safe standing? Have you ever been to Dortmund where they just absolutely do it right?
No, I haven't. You know, I love standing at football matches. I love, you know, that dynamic that it brings, the energy that it brings as well, you know? But it is different now. It is understandably different. But I think other, like you say, at Dortmund, and it has been shown that standing can work. I think it's probably just a logistical nightmare now for clubs to try and think about. I know Arsenal, having spoken to the guys at the AST a little bit about all this, are sort of like, well, you know, there's a lot that we'd have to do to make this happen. But yeah, it's a different experience. It's a very different experience standing on a terrace, but you know, it's maybe more comfortable now. So there's a trade-off, yeah. Particularly as you get older. You know, you need the cushioned seats.
What I don't like is the huge amount of stories, despite how our atmosphere has generally been on the uptick at Emirates Stadium. The number of stories I've been hearing in the last few weeks of stewards telling people to quiet down and sit down. And I mean, it's as James said, disgraciata. Because that's just changing football. And we could go off on a wormhole about how football's changed. I don't want to do that, but Highbury versus Emirates Stadium, you've been in both as a supporter, you've been in Emirates, obviously as a, in the club levels, and probably I'm sure you've done press row there as well. But what does Emirates lack that Highbury had for you?
History, I guess. History and a history of success, and like everything. Like I remember when I was a kid, you get the this little, could have been the Observer, it could have been Rothmans. They do a little football handbook that you would get every year. And it would be a page for each football club would be on there, and you could get the Arsenal page, and it would have, you know, the record attendance at Highbury, which is 60 odd thousand, or maybe it was 8, I can't remember, but it was obviously back in the terrace days, and it was 60 something thousand was the record crowd. And you know, there is just this history of the football club baked into the stones, if you like, at Highbury. And you know, the Emirates is, you know, a good modern stadium.
Sometimes what you don't say is more important than what you do.
Yeah,
say.
You know, I'm trying to put it the right way, because I think it is, you know, it's a great place to go and watch football because Arsenal are there. And I do think it's a comfortable stadium, and you know, the seats are good and the views are good, and but it's just lacking the history. And you know, we haven't ever seen a team at the Emirates parade a Premier League trophy. And I think as long as that's missing, you know, it will lack something in that regard. But then there are generations of Arsenal fans right now who only know Highbury as what it became. You know, which is, you know, just part of the way things go and the way things progress, if you want to put it in that way. But for people who grew up,
the flats are kind of nice. They're all right.
So I hear. I've got no idea. Never been in one. Well, not rich enough to buy one either.
In May we can change that.
Yeah, you never know. But I think you know, if you grew up and you started going to Highbury in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever it was. like, it's impossible to just not love what it is and what it was and what it represented. And sometimes what it represented was not necessarily just Arsenal, you know, even though that was what brought you there and kept you coming back. But what it represented was maybe the best years of your youth, or a time in your life when you were really happy and you didn't have the weight of responsibility of job and kids and all of those things that come a little bit later in your life. So I think, you know, that obviously is part of what Highbury means to so many people.
Yeah. And at 15 to 17 years of age, having a pretty frustrated childhood before that, Highbury does exactly that. It represents the time in my life and the thing that I cared about most during that time, where things started to click and resonate for me. And that's why I have such an obsession. And to this day, spend about 12 weeks a year in there. So we've got about 305 people in the chat right now. Please give us a thumbs up. Tammy Steeles, our head love officer, I won't even call her a like officer, is in the chat whipping up support. If you have any questions, this is the time to get them in, because we're going to move over to that about 5 or 6 minutes from now. The question segment is brought to us by the wonderful people at Zenith Coins. Speaking of Highbury, there's both a North Bank and a Clock End coin. You can get a 10% discount on those coins, thanks to Sophie and the Highbury squad, by using the special code listed on the scroll below. So that, that little movie line in the moving line in the white and red, has the code in there, and you can get those coins. They may be on back order, but you'll want to order them soon. And they help us to bring to you the show. You've been to the final topic I want to talk about is, you know, you've been to the States a few times for live podcast events, for the summer tours, except for when they're in Florida. Our viewership tends to be about 50-50 UK and Europe and the US. And, you know, I think you could probably attest to the way the international fan base, especially the one in the US that the team keeps coming back to, has grown and gone crazy for this club over the 10 plus years that they've been coming. How are those trips for you? Not necessarily the games. I mean, I remember you in LA and the Bayern game. You had the misfortune of sitting next to me, pinned between me and the wall. And I was pretty heavy back then, so you were literally pinned in there. And every time something happened, you bent over to talk into your microphone. And I think you were just bending over so that I wouldn't talk to you during the breaks. But, you know, we could debate that. But do you enjoy those tours? Is it a departure from kind of normal Arsenal journalistic life for you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think they're amazing. Wherever I've gone and met Arsenal fans, it's always been incredible. I've been to the States a few times. I've been to Australia as well. And the fans down there are super passionate, and, you know, they have to deal with, as you guys do over there, various time zone issues in order to watch the games. So for me, you know, I think you could go anywhere in the world where there's a collection of Arsenal fans and have a good time with those people, because you have this club that keeps you connected, whether you know each other or don't know each other. But no, they're brilliant. And it's, you know, what I think is amazing is the way people, they want to learn about not just what's going on right now, but the history of the club, and they want to embrace that. They want to understand, you know, what do these things mean? What does it mean to be invincible? You know, a lot of, I'm sure, fans in the US have come to this club in the subsequent 20 years since we last won the league, but who know everything there is to know about that team and those players. And, you know, part of that is existing in the era that we exist in, where it's easier to dig up archive footage and easier to find information and all that kind of stuff. But it's amazing. And I always love meeting fans, and everywhere I've been in the States in particular, the welcome has always been very generous and heartwarming. And sometimes, Mike, people have given me too much whiskey to drink. I'm not criticizing those
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina, perhaps, yes. Where
I'm still waiting for that Uber reimbursement. But no, I'm just kidding. That was
hang on. Have you got Revolut? I'll send you some money right now.
I do have Revolut, but no, that one's on me. My next one will be on you.
All right, that's good. But no, it is amazing, isn't it? And you know, from doing events and the events that we do, you know, when you bring people together in the name of Arsenal Football Club, everyone tends to have a good time. And long may that last.
And speaking of those events, I've been fortunate enough that I've been over for the final game of the season the last two seasons, one time with my daughter, one time with my son, and had the privilege of being one of 1,000 people or so that were jam-packed into the Union Chapel for two just absolutely amazing shows that you've done with your bromance podcast, as I like to call them, Arsenal Vision.
Yeah.
Have you been called that before? I mean, there's just a natural, and you talked about the collegial atmosphere and the podcast space and the, you know, whatever level or, you know, experience level, viewership level of the podcast arena or the blogging arena. Absolutely. From day one that we got in 2016 on a very small scale, that's been the most surprising thing to me, is how absolutely just generous people are with their time. You joined us in our first season of podcasting. There was no reason that you had to do that. You didn't have any idea who I was or how difficult of a time you'd end up having with me over the course of your life.
True. I mean, sliding doors moment there, Mike, I have to say. But look, it is what it is. Yeah.
That's a sliding doors moment gone wrong. But the
I walked into the sliding door. It didn't slide.
You got pinned in the sliding door. It is that kind of an atmosphere. But these kinds of events, you know, and doing drinks afterwards in the bar, just a phenomenal time. There's my 20-year-old who was just excited to be over in a country he could drink legally in. But just a phenomenal events. I've enjoyed them very much. Long may they continue.
Yes, they're great. And people, if they're interested in those, keep an eye on Arsblog next week, and maybe there might be a little information for you in that regard.
Aha, all righty. And you know, speaking of Arsenal events, it's day two now, kind of the first official day of Gunnarpalooza in Chicago. If you're anywhere around the Chicago area, or you know, just have the wherewithal, time and money just to hop on a plane and come here, you won't regret it. It's going to be a great event. We're doing a podcast on Saturday morning, raising money for Gunners versus Cancer. We'll also be raising money for the Arsenal Foundation through Elliot's unbelievable podcasting fundraising efforts that you are also involved in. And it's going to be a fun time leading directly up into the Wolves game. So that'll be fun. And, you know, again, the game is always the least important part of those kind of gatherings. It's the day before, the night before, the morning of, and after. So, so do enjoy that. We're going to go to user questions. We've got now 330 people in live chat. Please hit the thumbs up button and subscribe both to the Highbury Squad and the Gunners Podcast channels on YouTube. Zenith Coins, support the future, treasure the past. Visit Zenith Coins and use code HSNB10 for 10% off your purchase. And I don't have any in my background right now because I'm in a hotel room, but please do also go to buyruthbeckart.com. Ruth's art is unbelievable, and she is one of the biggest donors through her art to Gunners versus Cancer. We raise a lot of money at these events like this weekend, you know, giving her art away in exchange for donations.
Vacations and donations.
Yes, we give donations on vacation.
You're definitely not spending donations on vacations, Mike.
Yes, that needs to be clarified. So thank you for that. First question from Bill, aka Gunnarworks. Do you wish you could go to more games live, or do you have reasons for limiting the number of matches you attend in person?
Yeah, I wish, but there's such a production around every game on the website that it requires, you know, my attention a lot of the time. It's not to say I can't go, but it is it takes a lot of organizing, you know, to get someone to do the live blog, the match reports, the player ratings. I'm really lucky to have someone like Andrew Allen on board with RSBlog News, who does a lot of the so post-game stuff and features like that. But people like Phil Costa, for example, has been doing a lot of stuff with us, match reports and things like that. So it's good to have a team of people who are involved. But yes, ultimately it is restrictive. But I'm not complaining about that being restrictive, because that is what I have chosen to do. And I think once you start doing stuff on a website, people expect that stuff, you know. You can't just not cover a match just because I want to go to London. And it's not really a question of travel, because it's only a short hop, really.
Depends on what you're doing on a web. I mean, I did something on a website once that didn't go over as well as your blog.
Yeah.
Well,
but you know, only mics might take off one of these days. You never know. But
I got to give props to Andrew as well. Absolutely fantastic guy. I met him actually in the drinks kind of session after the first Union Chapel show, and I've spent a lot of time with him when I'm over in the city. He's just a lovely man, and too behind the scenes for my liking, for his level of charisma, or riz, as the kids like to say. He should be out in front more.
He's got drip. Is that what they say? Yeah.
Yeah. He's got, well, the drip is about this. Yep. The riz is about this.
See, he's got both. He's got riz, yeah, and
he does have, and that beard. I mean, I couldn't hope to do the beard game that he has.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. From our host, Sophie, the lovely Sophie, who would your ultimate golf foursome be? Does not have to be football related. I'm sure there'll be music involved in this.
Oh. Right. Well, the first one is Ian Wright, because he plays golf. We've often had a quick chat about, we must have a game, and it would be amazing to have a game of golf with Ian Wright. Who else would I like? I'm trying to figure out who plays golf, because you don't want to say, like, I want that person and they can't play golf, because that would...
So you're really looking at the competitive element of it, not just the personalities. Like,
it might be as well just like, who do you want to go on a walk with? Who would you like to walk down the beach with? You know, this is proper.
It's a 4-hour walk, though.
It's a 4-hour walk with sticks. I'm gonna say as well, and I know actually he's not a golfer because I'm restricting myself, but I would definitely choose Arsene Wenger. Just because, when would you ever get to, you know, spend 4 hours relaxing with Arsene Wenger and maybe get some good stories out of him and everything else? And who would my last one be? That is a good question.
James.
I don't think James would appreciate me bringing him on a golf course. I'm thinking of like an actor.
Even with Arsene Wenger and Ian Wright, he'd just hate it. It would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great, you know, someone there. You could use Arsene Wenger as a golf club. He is. He does have that kind of, stance, doesn't he?
He would have to be a fourth iron, though.
Okay.
Because of fourth place.
Let me just take someone from the current squad. I know Declan Rice is a golfer, but James is available. Can James caddy? I don't know. I'm going to say Aaron Ramsdale, because he's a fun guy and he likes a game of golf as well. So I'm going to say Aaron Ramsdale. James can drive the buggy.
That's a great answer. Yeah. And he'd have to do it with shirtless, like the promotions for his one man show and his book as well.
It would depend on where we're playing golf. Like, if we're in the, you know, the links of Scotland in the middle of winter, I don't think that would be fair because, you know, frostbite and stuff like that. Yeah. But maybe if we were, you know, somewhere in the south of Spain, something like that, you know,
that would work.
Stop for a bit of sangria on the ninth. That'd be good.
Sounds lovely. All right. Next question we have from Newman. Newman is a regular in the chat. Most of what he has to say I would not put up on the screen, but this one is pretty good. Dear Arse Blogs, because you know the Arse Blogs of the world. What's your favorite synth pop hit of the 80s? Think carefully. He seems to think that there's a correct answer to this question.
I mean, there's probably a few really wrong answers. What's my favorite? I'm leaning towards... See, he wants me to say Cars by Gary Numan. I'm pretty certain.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I didn't even think about that. You've definitely got what he was going for.
To be fair, it is a great one. It is a great one.
Is Devo considered synth pop?
I don't know. I think Devo are a bit more avant-garde, aren't they, than sort of...
I certainly don't have the musical knowledge or nous that you have.
I will go... I'm going to say Don't Go by Yazoo.
Is that Please Don't Go? Please Don't Go?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not that one.
Okay.
Well, then. Don't tell me it didn't make it to the States. Come on.
It could have very well made it to the States and just not made it into my head.
Yeah, ears. I'm going to say, yeah, that or maybe something by Howard Jones. They were good poppy songs as well.
Yeah,
I like that. I'm gonna go with Yazoo because it's in that kind of, you know, not quite Depeche Mode adjacent stuff. I like Depeche Mode, but I'm gonna go with Yazoo. I think Alison Moyet is, you know, pretty great as well. So Vince Clark, Alison Moyet, Yazoo, Don't Go. How about that?
There you go, Newman. And he pointed out In Cars was 1979, so technically.
Oh my God.
Qualify. We're old. We're really old.
There you go.
Archangel in the chat wants your home address, apparently. Is there a way to answer that question without without disclosing too much?
I'm originally from
postcode, please.
After we moved back from England, we moved to a part of Dublin called Temple Oak. And I now live in a part of Dublin called Kimmage. Joshua Kimmich. I know. I had to go there. So yeah, I'm sort of on the south side of the city, not too far from the city center, really about a half an hour walk into the city center. And that's where I grew up.
So who was it that scored the second goal for Barcelona in the 2006 World Cup final again? I'm forgetting his name, but whatever his last name, I don't know how I'm forgetting this, but it was Belletti. I'm sure in Barcelona you lived in Belletti, a suburb of Barcelona, just like you now live in Kimmich.
I did not. I lived in Eixample in Barcelona in the center of
Barcelona. This could have been wrapped up kind of as part of the golf foursome question, but I love Mikey Hers. So I'm putting his question up here. If you could interview or pod with anyone in the world of football, who would it be? Not necessarily Arsenal related.
Not necessarily Arsenal.
And why would it be Mustafi?
That could be a hell of an interview. I mean, again, I really feel like Arsene is sort of a bucket list type figure for me when it comes to an interview. I never got the chance, and even when the autobiography was out and he did pretty much every podcast in the world, I didn't manage to make it happen. I didn't try very hard to make it happen though, because he was just doing so many interviews and he looked like in lots of them that he would rather have been anywhere else. Who would be a good one in the world of football?
Salt Bay.
Salt Bay. Jesus. I think, you know, if the language barrier wasn't a thing, Messi could be a really fascinating interview because of the career and everything that's gone on with him. So I'm going to say Lionel Messi just because I think he is basically the greatest player ever to have played the game. And so to have an opportunity to sit down with him and talk about, you know, various aspects of the game would be fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Just got time for one, maybe two more questions.
Okay.
I'm going to put up Keith Bird's. If the season ends today, is it successful? The season ended in the middle of April. I that can't be successful by any metric. I mean, but obviously what he's talking about, quarterfinal in the Champions League and second in the Prem.
Second.
Joint second? No, he's not even joint second.
I mean, I guess you could say it would be consolidation of what we did last season rather than success. But it's impossible to answer. I mean, look, I think we've seen enough this season to know that we are a good team and this club is going in the direction that we've all wanted it to go in for a long time. Regardless, you know, of what happens in the next six games, I think there's been enough evidence of that in this season. So if you can call it successful to more or less replicate what you did last season by finishing second and then identify areas where you can improve next season, I guess you could say that's a success. But ultimately, it comes down to trophies. How do people view success, silverware, and trophies? Yeah. So, you know, I'm...
Is there a point where that kind of standardized view of things becomes, like, when people claim that if, like, Chelsea were to win the League Cup, would have won the League Cup this season, would their season have been more successful? Because a lot of Manchester United fans last year were claiming that they had a better season than we did because they won a cup. They won a trophy. Mm.
Yeah, look, it's all relative, isn't it? And again, it comes back around to this sort of banter era that we're living in where everything that any football club does is piled on by fans of every other football club because that's just the way social media operates. What I think would be absolutely fascinating is if you removed Manchester City from the equation, from the Premier League equation, would we have a different view of what success is? Would we have a different... I think we'd have a more competitive Premier League. But this is what we have to deal with. So I think it's hard to say, yes, it would absolutely be a success. But again, going back to what we talked about at the start, you have to be able to step back and objectively look at what it is that you are... what it is you're doing and who it is you're competing with. And, you know, we've competed with pretty much every team so far in the Premier League this season. But apart from Aston Villa, which is really annoying. And Fulham. Yeah. So, you know, but that's football and those are the vagaries of football. So I'm going to err on the side of yes, but I obviously hope that over the next 3 weeks we can make that real, genuine success that nobody could argue with.
Yeah, qualified success, maybe we say. Mostly because of the fact that we had a Champions League run that wasn't embarrassing. It just certainly didn't end well, but, you know, wasn't group stage, wasn't round of 16. Comment of the day from Sophie: can't stop picturing Gunnar Plagg in a buggy naked with Arsene Wenger in the back. Now I can't stop thinking of that either.
Certainly an image that once it gets into your brain, it's difficult to...
I'm going to ask Jacob if he can illustrate that now.
Well, one more question. I don't want to give anything away, but I think Jacob has had, you know, some requests for, you know, erotic Arsenal related pictures in the past. So
those will be the least poorly of his poorly drawn artwork. But
One more question, because it should have a one-word answer. I don't know what your answer will be, but it should be just one word. Do you think Vieira has a future at Arsenal? I'm assuming he means Fabio and not Patrick.
My gut feeling is no, but when I think about it a little bit more logically, they paid a lot of money for him. There are players in this squad who are probably more likely to leave than him in the summer, who are more likely to be sold or moved on. And I think maybe by default and by virtue of the fact you can't just hoof out half your squad in one summer, I'm gonna say yes, but kind of by default.
Okay, yeah, I think so. I love when people just pop up that they've been here the whole time or maybe part of the time, and then you know they pop up when you mention their name. I'm gonna try that again. Ian Wright. All right, it didn't work.
No. Good try. Maybe you have to say it three times like Candyman, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly. And click my heels. So that's it. It's been a great hour, Andrew. I appreciate your time. Keep plugged into our socials at the Gooners Pod, at Highbury Squad. Of course, you know, everybody knows to find you at Arsblog and Arsblog News as well. We're going to have announcements about our next show. We're taking next Thursday off because I am going to be at the Arsenal Supporters Trust. It's the annual meeting with Amy Lawrence and Rafa Honigstein and, of course, all the great people at the AST, and I'll be there that Thursday evening off of Holloway Road. But we do have a great guest who I'm going to be interviewing for the first time, is scheduled, and schedules can change. But going to be interviewing Ian Stone for the first time live from the North Bank of Highbury on May 2nd on Thursday. So stay tuned for that. And on Highbury Squad on Monday, live shows return with Sophie and an amazing panel of guests, including David Hillier, FK from Latte Firm, and Henry Winter. And it's going to be discussing, has Mikel Arteta's process evolved to progress, and is success next for the Arsenal? Those titles, that's all Sophie. She's the best at that. So thank you, Andrew. Thank you to the Highbury Squad for having us over to your place. And do not forget to tune in for all the great content, including next Monday with Sophie, Super Kev, and the Gooners podcast on our channel as well. Thank you to the amazing chat, the Gooner community, 350 strong tonight. And Andrew, any last words or wisdom you'd like to impart to the Arsenal universe?
No, just thank you to everybody. If you've been here for the hour, thank you so much for watching, and thanks for the continued support for everything that we do on Arsblog. It's much appreciated. We don't take it for granted, and hopefully we can catch up with you either at a game or during the summer or one of the events in the not too distant future. But thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me. Good luck with the new stuff, and we'll chat soon.
Fantastic. Well, if you'll stick around for 30 seconds, we just have our outro, and we'll see you guys all in about 2 weeks when we once again travel from Highbury to the Grove.